Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks for being here, everybody. Hope you had a great weekend. Brian Kilmeade Show moving your direction. And there is a lot of things in the air. This is going to be an exciting week. State of the Union, mini State of the Union, State of the State, President First Address to the Nation, whatever you want to call it. It's happening tomorrow. Going to Washington today. We'll be there Tuesday and Wednesday doing this show from there. This hour, we're going to be joined by Brad Meltzer and Craig Shirley, presidential historian. And he wants to put in perspective what we all saw on Friday. There's a lot going on. Meanwhile, the First Lady hosts a roundtable in support of the Take It Down Act, which has passed the Senate, but not the House. So that should be good to see the First Lady at about 2 o'clock today. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
You know, they'd say, like, Trump is a threat to our democracy, which is ironic since he was elected with a majority of the popular vote. They started saying I was a threat to democracy. But if you just replace threat to democracy with threat to bureaucracy, it makes total sense.
That was Elon Musk to Joe Rogan. Doge causing controversy every day, but all in the name of fixing a federal government that's about to crash into an economic brick wall. What they plan to do this week and why every federal worker has a homework assignment in their inbox. Please do it.
Number two.
What the administration is doing, especially with ICE raids in schools, repatriating people in military airplanes for intimidation, talking about housing people on Guantanamo, that's for intimidation.
That is Senator Mark Kelly. Gloves are off in America and in Mexico as the Trump team is going all illegal immigrants on drugs, getting them everywhere, not just here. The main target this week, illegals in the blue cities and cartels in Mexico. No joke. They think we're coming. I think we're coming, too.
Number one.
You're gambling with the lives of millions of people. You're gambling with World War III. You're gambling with World War III.
That was just a little of the explosiveness at the Oval Office last week. Ukraine Zelensky trying to reassemble his NATO support system after Friday's Oval meltdown. We all watched, and so did the rest of the world. And what the ramifications are, I'll tell you. First off, emergency meetings in Europe last week, and there was a NATO meeting in Europe without us, and they talked about a lot of things without us. And maybe they should get used to maybe pulling their own weight. I think NATO is extremely important, but maybe they need to take more of a role in what NATO does. I also have they put out a four-step plan to keep the military aid flowing into Ukraine. They promised to do that. Any lasting peace must ensure Ukraine's sovereignty and security. Okay. In the event of a peace deal, European leaders will aim to deter any future invasion by Russia into Ukraine. There will be a coalition of the willing to defend Ukraine and guarantee peace in the country. And why are they doing that? It really will affect them. If Russia is able to take down Ukraine, they'll finish off Georgia. Moldova will flip. They'll pretend it's an election. Same with the Baltics. And then we'll say, okay, let's just let him have him. And let's just call it the Soviet Union again. Craig Shirley joins us now, presidential historian, best-selling author, and called the Oval Office Exchange yesterday a Reshevac moment for Trump. Craig, welcome back.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you. Good morning.
Hey, so first off, your thoughts about who looks better emerging from that ugly fight?
Well, clearly Trump does. You know, the American people traditionally rally to their president in the time of foreign policy crisis. I remember when John Kennedy had the Bay of Pigs fiasco, you know, early in his administration, and it was a complete disaster. But he went to something like 75% approval rating, and he joked, you know, that maybe we should mess up more often. Maybe I'd get even a higher rating. The American people traditionally rally to the president. They're probably rallying right now or have already to Donald Trump's support over Zelensky's ill manners and his lack of inappropriate behavior.
So, I mean, let's hear a little of the fallout from it. First off, here's a little of the fracture. Cut two.
He broken this ceasefire. He killed our people, and he didn't exchange prisoners. We signed the exchange of prisoners, but he didn't do it. What kind of diplomacy, JD, you are speaking about? What do you mean?
I'm talking about the kind of diplomacy that's going to end the destruction of your country.
Yes, but if you
Mr. President, with respect, I think it's disrespectful for you to come into the Oval Office and try to litigate this in front of the American media.
Trump then scolding the wartime leader.
You're not in a good position. You don't have the cards right now. With us, you start having
cards.
See, he didn't understand the card reference, by the way. And English was an issue. But it does, you do think about Russia. They are the evil nation right now. Them, you know, you look at North Korea, you look at China, and you look at Iran. But you put Russia ahead of the class.
Yes, among the evil nations of the world. Yes, you put Russia at the head of the class. But, you know, you put it in perspective, too. A little tiny country like Ukraine is key, they've got their hands full. Just fighting them. They can't possibly conceive any type of wider war. They want out of this as much as anybody. That they can't be rewarded for their behavior. They can't be rewarded with land or with money or anything else for their behavior. Putin has to be punished. Has to be pushed back.
So French President Macron said over the weekend, he told his local newspaper overnight, there needs to be a strategic dialogue with European countries that don't have nuclear weapons because they can no longer depend on the American nuclear deterrent. That's an incredible statement, I think, from a NATO ally, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's an incredible statement. When did Donald Trump say that the nuclear deterrent wasn't available to Europe anymore? When did anybody in the U.S. government say that? It's just a reckless thing for Macron to say.
But that just shows where the relationship is at. And then we find out Jack Keane agrees with you. He says the only answer to the question should be from Zelensky after he got to the Oval Office. Thank you, Mr. President. I'm going to work with you to achieve a peaceful end to the war. So
exactly.
He thinks that he was a little off that day because he's really been at a constant war for 3 years.
Well, I was taught at an early age, you don't ration your manners, right? It's not enough to say thank you once. Say thank you twice. You say thank you many times because many times America has come to the aid of Ukraine. So once is not sufficient. Two times not sufficient. It's many times it'll be sufficient.
So, by the way, he said I'm ready to sign the mineral deal, and now Scott Bessent essentially says it's not out there. So we'll see where that goes. Here's what Democrats were saying, Craig. He's a little different from us. Cut 10.
It is absolutely shameful what is happening right now. The White House has become an arm of the Kremlin.
I saw the meeting as a despicable display of bullying by the President of the United States and the Vice President of the United States.
They just got so hot-headed, the President and the Vice President, that what happened. You know, it's the chaos of this presidency.
So you knew they were never going to be in Trump's corner, but
no,
they saw
not.
It. They didn't even say, well, Zelensky's got to show a little bit more respect, but... There was no couching it if you flipped around to channels.
But, it is a sad state of affairs, Brian, isn't it? Because partisanship used to stop at the nation's shore, right? Is that we were unified as Americans in all of our foreign dealings. And we were, you know, through World War I, World War II, through the Cold War. And it's not because of Trump. It's because the change in the Democratic Party has become so left-wing, so anti-Republican, so anti-intellectual that they will use any stick they can to hit the Republican Party or Donald Trump. They've become almost irrelevant to the equation because they look at their recent poll numbers. They're 52% disapproval and 32% approval. They're in the toilet. They're irrelevant. We shouldn't even pay attention to what they say because it means nothing anyway.
So, Craig, you did that book on Chiefs of Staff, I remember. And you also talk about putting together the whole State of the Union address. This is an address to the joint, address to Congress tomorrow night. What would you like to hear in that?
American exceptionalism. America is back. After our long national nightmare is over after the 4 years of the disastrous Joe Biden presidency. Everything that's supposed to be going up is going up. Everything that's supposed to be going down is going down. It should be a good old-fashioned Ronald Reagan type, You know, we're good people. We're the leaders of the free world, and we do good things to help people here in America, and help people of the world. Just back to basics. The Democrats are going to be hyper partisanship. He doesn't have to be. He doesn't want to be. He has to be take the argument above that. He has to be above that. The phrase presidential is overused, but really, this is the time to be presidential.
It would be great. Here's Jason Miller with a preview. Cut 31. You know, he's a longtime aide.
Right. After 4 years of Joe Biden, what President Trump is able to do is connect with people in their everyday lives. And so when we talk about securing the border and deporting all these criminal illegals, making sure people know that they are going to be safe, getting rid of the international gangsters like Trende Aragua, sending them out of here, dealing with the cartels, stopping the scourge of fentanyl. People have to feel safe and secure.
You know what I think is going to be next? You know, what he's done at the border is nothing short of extraordinary. And now we're cracking down with ICE, grabbing the criminals, as many as we can. We have just broken up. This came across a human smuggling ring that went right to Guatemala. And now we have 3,000 troops at the border. I think they're going to start hitting the cartels directly in Mexico. Craig, what would your reaction be if we did that?
It's clearly a threat to American security. So, yes, we ought to hit them. But also, he's got to talk a lot about the return of American hostages who are suffering for such a long time. Under Joe Biden's administration. I mean, this is such a huge success. I mean, this alone would merit, you know, if things were equal, it would merit a Nobel Peace Prize nomination. He'll never get it, of course. Like conservatives never get it. You know, Reagan never got it. Douglas MacArthur never got it. They all deserve it, but they never got it. And Trump won't get it either. But what he's done is remarkable to these hostages just on that issue alone, just in 1 month.
You talking about in Israel?
Well, yes, but also other places.
The five out of Israel. Yeah. The one out of Russia, the two out of Russia,
right,
and then you got five out of Venezuela.
Right, exactly.
All right. Your view on DOGE?
More power to them. I hope they go through their government like a mixmaster and cut. The American people want this. They said, I remember seeing one poll toward the end of the election last year that something like over 70% of the American people wanted radical change in Washington. They didn't want minimal change. They wanted radical change. So that is a mandate for DOGE to go as strong as possible and cut as much as possible. Look at all the waste, fraud, and abuse they're finding. Think how what it's going to be a week from now, how much they're going to find. So I'd say more power to them.
So, Craig, looking in perspective, I know we're only a couple of months in, but this is a historic presidency for so many reasons.
Yes.
One of which is the first one since Grover Cleveland and the second ever to go back into the office. He went from the least experienced president to the most experienced president with 4 years off in between, which Clinton, you know, no modern president had that luxury. What is the best way to take advantage of that? What do you think he learned in those 4 years off?
He was watching and observing. He learned, from his mistakes in the first term and things that he wanted to do didn't get done. I think also he learned too is that never trust a Washington insider. Never don't trust the insiders at all. This election, that election I said before, reminded me of the elections of, because it really wasn't about Republicans versus Democrats or conservatives versus liberals. It was a clash of cultures. It reminded me of the election of 1828 with John Quincy Adams versus Andrew Jackson, and the election of 1980 with Reagan versus Carter. That two totally different, you know, it's like that old book, you know, Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus, is that there's no overlap between the parties anymore. There used to be overlap. There used to be Reagan Democrats. There used to be liberal Republicans, but there's no overlap. The only way you get things done now in America is you have to have total control, like Donald Trump has. He has, you know, for a time, Joe Biden had total control, and he wanted to mess up this country, and he did. Now, Republicans, Donald Trump, have total control, so they got to fix all the mistakes and all the errors and all the rotten things done during the Biden administration.
You look at Bush. If some people listening to us right now don't think he was a good president, I do think he was. And people look at Jimmy Carter. Most people don't think he was a good president. You know, you can go back Al Gore. If he had won, I think he would have been, you know, he would have been competent to be a president.
Yes.
Well, we just
yes,
watched a guy for 4 years that couldn't do the job. And everybody covered up for him. This is the most underreported story in my lifetime. And now people are beginning
Absolutely.
To write it.
Yeah, I know. Like, subject whatsoever, credibility. Look, there are a lot of stories to be, you know, an old sports writer for the Washington Post once said, sometimes the better story is in the loser's locker room. And there's a story here about the collapse of the Democratic Party, and I truly mean the collapse of the Democratic Party. They are what are they about? They're about defending corrupt government and abortion on demand. That's all they're about. They're attacking Trump on DOJ, Trump on the border, the Trump on Ukraine, on Europe, on every issue. They never, ever, ever come out in support of Trump or the Republican position or the conservative position. It's just knee-jerk attack, attack, attack. And thus they become irrelevant. Everybody's turning them off because they're just anti, anti, anti.
Yeah, we don't want to feel bad about our country. We know we're not perfect, but we were very happy to be here. Craig Shirley, thanks so much for putting in perspective that historic meltdown on Friday.
Thank you. Thank you, Brian, very much. Have a good week.
You too. 1-866-408-7669. Your call's next, and Brad Meltzer. So glad you're here.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. I'm Brian Kilmeade. If you want something fun and easy to search for homes and apartments, then you should be using the Redfin app. Whether I'm searching for my next place, if I want to buy, if I want to rent, or if I just want to scroll through and see some dream homes, like, for example, something on the beach or at least a walk to the beach, a big house, second, maybe a third floor, I use the Redfin app. Redfin makes it fun to search all the homes for sale and apartments for rent in your neighborhood. You can filter for price, for beds, for baths, square footage, and so much more. So if you find a place you love, Redfin makes it easy to go see it in person. Just schedule a tour right from the app. Plus, if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents know how to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they close twice as many deals as other agents. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards your next home. So whether you're looking to buy, you're looking to rent, you're looking to sell, Redfin's got you covered. Download the Redfin app to get started.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
I think Vladimir Putin is an old school communist, a former KGB agent. He's not to be trusted, and he is dangerous. The way I view this is that China, Russia, Iran, and North Korea are engaged with Axis powers, and they are not on America's side. Let's be crystal clear about that.
So that is Speaker Johnson said it was no big deal. But keep in mind, we have to find a way to arm Ukraine. Get personalities out of it. If you think that it's a small, no big deal, if you find Kyiv overrun and Zelensky hanging in Times Square, in Center Square, you're crazy. Pick up your head, look around, think about history. Howard, listening on Coyle in Omaha. Hey, Howard.
Brian, last Friday, Zelensky simply tried to explain that Ukraine needs security guarantees that will hold Putin back, but will also stay in effect from one U.S. or change of administration to the next. We saw what happened after Trump unilaterally negotiated Doha, and Biden came in and Afghanistan got swallowed up. And I'm saying that at this point, Zelensky cannot justify signing over 50% of his nation's wealth in minerals to America in exchange for no U.S. boots on the ground.
He doesn't want to. So what's his choice? What's his choice? I mean, just think about it. So you want to lose. You go in there. Things are going to be negotiated. You'll see what Russia can do. They never looked eyeball to eyeball to Donald Trump. And if Russia comes out and is unreasonable, there is no deal. And we're going to arm them up big time.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
If you pay taxes and you don't like that you have to pay so much in taxes, And then you find out that there's significant fraud and waste that's been exposed. You should be celebrating.
You probably saw, like, you know, they'd say, like, Trump is a threat to our democracy, which is ironic since he was elected with the majority of the, you know, popular vote. They started saying I was a threat to democracy. But if you just replace threat to democracy with threat to bureaucracy, it makes total sense.
So I thought it was interesting that Elon Musk just went to Joe Rogan right in the middle of him serving with Trump. And for those people who thought he'd get bored and they get mad at each other and fade out, I think that they flew back together from Mar-a-Lago. They went to Mar-a-Lago together and came back. He had one of his kids with him. I think he's up to 14, Elon. But I think he had X with him. So they're tight. And what he is becoming an assistant. And what he's allowed them to do, the enemies, is to say this is a administration of billionaires, bunch of billionaires. One has nothing to do with the other. You knew how rich Trump was. And it really bothers Trump that Elon's worth more. Where have you heard that? The guy's 78 years old. You think he's worried that the guy with seven international huge companies, maybe the fifth biggest or maybe the richest person in the world, makes more money than him? Who's got the job? And who's he looking to help? I mean, this whole thing with Doge, it's just overwhelming on a daily basis. But here's what I would do. Now that the cabinet secretaries are in place, I'd keep the Doge teams everywhere, right? Have them do their work, but go back to Pete Hegseth in defense. Go back to Kevin Sean Duffy in transportation. Go back and find out what the EPA needs to be cut by going to Lee Zeldin. Because I think as smart as these men and women are that are working these systems and trying to find out where the fat is and cut everything down to size and modernize the communications, you still don't know it. Like there's no way of knowing how to take care of an arsenal of nuclear weapons unless you have them and been doing it. So you go in there with your managers and you decide through them who to let go. And if you feel as though they're stiff-arming you to keep the workforce in place, then you can act. But I think there's some sensitive divisions of the federal government that the administration has already had to walk back when it comes to the FAA, when it comes to the EPA, and also yesterday when it comes to their nuclear division. And so I thought this whole story was going to be about how Doge came in there and they just started cutting people arbitrarily and they asked 50 more to come back after they cut them. But you know how the story ends? The story ends is they are in dire need of reform. They have gone dead on the vine. There are nuclear weapons older than everybody alive today. We have to find a way to modernize it. And everyone just keeps churning. So I love that Doge will stop the churn. But I do run a cap into people's experience for doing it. And I don't hate every federal worker, and neither do they, but it's coming off like that. Now, earlier I played what Democrats are saying about Doge. Here's what Republicans are saying. Cut 30.
Give me a sense on your concerns right now.
To be a little bit more compassionate in the way we message this. It matters to people, and I want to make sure that we don't come across as insensitive. We care about people. That's why we're making the cuts.
This idea that they're going to just fire people via Twitter, Elon Musk, that to me seems rash. It seems not appropriate.
Doge specifically, but the cuts, do you have any concerns about that?
We're having conversations with our district about all that.
Yeah. So what happened is they're just firing people and locking them out of their computer. I think that you could do it without doing that. I think there could be a softening there. I'm not angry at people. If you got caught them stealing from the office and they go to the union and they're able to stay on their job, I could see the anger just shutting down the computer. But a lot of these people just go to work and they find out they're cut out. I mean, they got budgets they got to go to. I don't hate every federal worker, but there's a lot there. So the 3% that go to work, great. For the rest that have been maybe having that job and a job on the side, you better answer your proof of life email and start working. John, you're listening on the Fox News Radio app in California. Hey, John.
Good morning, Brian. Hey, I'm concerned with how the Trump administration didn't pick up this meeting. Michael Goodwin reported on this, of Murphy and some other Democrats with Zelensky 45 minutes before he went with Trump, even posted it on social media. I don't know how Trump's administration didn't pick that up and expect fireworks before Zelensky got there. Then one other point, I noticed the prime minister from England announcing all these financing for Zelensky.
Yeah.
I also noticed the key word loan, financing guaranteed loans. And that's what Trump's mad about as well.
Yeah, they do say some of it's loans, some of it's grants, a lot of it's loans. And by the way, that's what you should go to. And instead of taking out a loan, instead of saying, here's your money, we'll loan it to you and we'll take 10 years to get it back until you stand your country up again. Trump is saying, let's go to business together. And you guys don't have the equipment to mine this rare earth. We got it. We're going to come in there the day this war ends, and we're going to start finding things that you probably aren't going to be able to find. I was seeing these features with these mineral experts, and they're saying that they're not sure what exactly Ukraine has, but more than likely, it's more than they even thought. So there's a chance they could come up dry, but we'll take that risk as a country. We know what that's like to drill and not get something, and then eventually you will. And some of these mines are in Russian territory. But there's a lot going on. When Zelensky got out of the car, he looked aggravated. And I think that he was in there on edge. And he just can't stand the thought of Vladimir Putin. I mean, can't stand the thought of him. And to think that they're going to go back and treat him like equals. One thing he said to Brett Baer in the interview a little bit later that night, they said, well, the president wants to be a broker. He wants to be able to bring both sides. He goes, no, I want him on my side. We got invaded. Like, he should be on our side. So I don't think they understand. In that way, I think there might be an English barrier on really how it works. So there's a lot of people weighing in. Marco Rubio getting criticized for not stepping in. Cut five.
I hope this could all be reset. I hope he comes to the realization that we're actually trying to help his country here before it suffers thousands of more casualties. Why is any of this good for anybody? And the argument that we're going to just keep it going forever, that's absurd. We are trying to end a war. You cannot end a war unless both sides come to the table, starting with the Russians. I'm not promising you it's possible. I'm not telling you it's 90% likely. I'm saying it's 0% likely if we don't get them to a negotiating table.
Yeah, well, we're looking at the military reality on the ground. One thing that no one pushes back on, the Russians are losing 1,000 soldiers a day. And I encourage everyone to pick up the New York Post today and read the account of the Russian prisoners, because we've sent somebody, one of our reporters at the New York Post, one of the New York Post reporters, same company, and they talked to 25 Russian prisoners, to a man. They have no idea what they're fighting for. They did it because they're thoroughly out of money. They were coerced in other situations. They were told they're not going to war. They ended up in war. Just to understand what the opposition is. They're no determined fighting force. They've been an outright disaster. And in every day, they're making our main enemy weaker. So there are some positives going on in Ukraine. I'm going to come back. Maybe we'll get Brad Meltzer on. He's got caught up in his book tour. He's on TV right now. So hopefully he'll be joining us next. If not, I'll be able to take some more of your calls. So glad you're here on this Monday. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
To what extent is immigration as an issue part of your problem with working class voters?
I guess my question would be, what does the word problem mean?
People voting for the other side and not for you.
We have a problem on immigration because of the lack of progress that we've had on this issue. As we know, Republicans weaponize that lack of progress.
Okay, that is someone who's absolutely clueless what's happening in Queens and in New York City. And what's going on, too, the mayor is finally cooperating with ICE. We've had the biggest, outside Chicago, we had the biggest conglomerate of the Venezuelan gang members right in New York City. You see what's happening with illegals, and she is unprepared to answer that question. She has no problem with the borders being wide open. Remember her theatrics at the border? Well, right now, it's going to be fascinating to see. I think it's four, maybe five Democratic mayors going in front of the Oversight Committee to justify their sanctuary city status and defend it. Now, it's going to be interesting because Mayor Adams in New York City kind of is off that. He said, I've been trying to change it. And if each one of these mayors comes out and says, well, you know, this is the rules, where's the evidence that you're upset by the sanctuary city status? Or if you're the mayor of Boston, You love that criminals are there. You don't want ICE anywhere near you. And I'm getting worried about the whole state of Massachusetts now. Because Massachusetts yesterday had this crazy guy with a knife running around chasing people with a gun, with a knife, until he got into a Chipotle, and there was an off-duty cop there and killed him. He was stabbing people. And the mayor comes out and says, our hearts go out to the family of the victim, meaning the stabber. That's the attitude. You have the mayor of Chicago with, get this, 6% approval rating. They're going to take all their momentum and all their and all their swagger to Capitol Hill. And I think this is going to be epic, potentially, if the Republicans are prepared, and some Democrats that have a head on their shoulders, to make this as consequential as when the Ivy League presidents came to Congress to defend themselves and their anti-Semitism that is raging on campus and their lack of tolerance for anything that doesn't think like anybody doesn't think like them. I don't know if you saw One Nation last night, and I hope you did. We played in the morning, and we had a whole feature on the University of Austin. And they are somebody that don't care if you're conservative or Republican. Doesn't matter. You're allowed to speak your mind. You're allowed to. You'll not be suppressed. Mostly they focus on getting you a job afterwards and teach you entrepreneurship and making you read the classics and be well-rounded. That type of university is resonating in America. And now when I see that Donald Trump's numbers are rising from 18 to 33-year-olds, I'm really encouraged for the next generation. For those people who are thinking doom and gloom, we're done, we're finished, we're through after George Floyd and the 1619 Project. I told you, hold on. America is a self-correcting country, and we're doing it now. We just got to get our budget in line. And Trump with Doge, I think just he'll be a little bit more careful. I think that'll be big. But if you just, and Eric, that was a great idea you had. You just reminded me. By coming in with that bite on immigration, if you want to know one area that the president has done beyond the wildest expectations good, it has to be in immigration. You know about the trickle at the border. It slowed down to a level that no one thought possible. They were saying that Donald Trump walked away from bipartisan immigration reform. Can't touch him on this. It is basically gone. The president has now put his army down there, some Marines down there, and now they're eyeing the cartels. New York Times yesterday, a barrage of arrests in Mexico, drug seizures, lab busts by Mexican authorities taking on and maybe taking down the Sinaloa cartel. Mexican officials are doing this. The cartels have sown terror in Mexico. And they said many people thought, me too, that they were more powerful than the government. But now they're being cracked down on like El Salvador did. They said, you can't overcome the gangs. He says, I'll arrest every one of them, put them in jail forever. And he did. Now, in Mexico, every day there have been arrests and detentions. The country's law enforcement seized nearly as much fentanyl in the last 5 months as it did the previous year. President Sheinbaum's administration says it has nearly 900 arrests of the Sinaloa cartel alone. The Mexican government said it was begun sending them to the United States, and they did. Two dozen cartel operatives dating back 30, 40 years, including murderers who killed Americans. We've been trying to get them out. Didn't know this. We've been trying to get these out for decades. We send 3,000 troops to the border, and we say that these cartels are terror organizations. Now we're going to slap tariffs on Mexico and Canada and China. You know why we're doing it? Because of the ingredients and the selling of fentanyl. And this is the president seeing those moms that lost their kids that aren't drug addicts. One time they make a bad mistake and they're dead. One and done. And he said, I'll do something about it. Guys, he's done it in 2 months and he's done it internationally. China's not said much yet, but we know the precursors are all there. Nobody denies it. And you know that China could stop it in 2 seconds because they are famed. If you read, especially Tom Cotton's book, it's number one in the country. They have surveillance on everyone. They're giving you patriotism scores on a daily basis to see if you can get a new house, to see if you can get a new job. And if you don't score, if you complained, you lose a demerit, let's say. Now, you're going to tell me that people making drugs, they're looking the other way? Of course not. And they say it's our fault for wanting them. Forget it. This is addictive drugs. America's always like drugs. Sorry about that. Let's not expose people to a drug that kills you on sight. And that is the most underappreciated gain, and I expect the president to bring that up. But wait, I think in a matter of days, we're going to hear about Americans' takedown of the Sinaloa cartel with raids that are reminiscent of Al-Qaeda in Iraq and Afghanistan. So we'll see how this goes. But I'm really encouraged. Senator Mark Kelly, who never, that resume makes me so encouraged that he'll be like Fetterman and pick and choose his spots to fight Trump instead of every time. He was asked about it. He dropped the ball. Cut 17.
What we need long term is a negotiation with the Republicans on longstanding border policy. What the administration is doing, especially with ICE raids in schools, with flying, repatriating people who often aren't only criminals in military airplanes, hey, for intimidation.
Can we just pause this 1 second, Eric? So what he just said is so wrong. When they have members of the gangs, who those 16 to 18-year-olds were then beat up on those two cops 2 years ago or last year during the holidays, they were teenagers. If they're in school because they're placed there in the sponsor homes, you bet ICE is going to be waiting outside there, number one. And number two, we're flying the worst of the worst to Gitmo and then flying them back to Venezuela. Did your guy, President Biden, get anybody back in Venezuela? No. You gave them oil and gas contracts to take that outlaw regime and put them back online. And you said you had a promise to have fair elections, and they were a travesty. The guy that's in office right now got 18% of the vote. So instead of Mark Kelly saying the last administration dropped the ball, and I like some of the things they're doing, and this is what I expect from an astronaut and a decorated war veteran, but instead, he keeps showing that he's pure politics, which, you know, not only is he boring, great resume, but he's just a terrible politician, too. They have him on for his military street cred. We used to be able to do that. Go, well, this is a good move on the border. Hey, I don't like Doge. Okay, fine. But I can appreciate what you're doing at the border. I can appreciate that you get the worst of the worst out of the cities. You are actually a senator in Arizona. You know how bad the border is. And you know how improved it is. Under President Trump, at least say it. So when you are critical, people will listen. You don't have to. You can just keep, listen, Senator Kelly, you got a bad personality. You're not electric. You have a great resume. And at least you could be somebody who talks honestly and fairly about the country and patriotically. So, and against Pete Hegseth, they never even gave him a shot. Hey, go to BrianKilmeade.com. Find out. I'll be in St. Louis March 22nd. And then right in June, I'll be in Dayton, Ohio. WHIO listeners, I cannot wait to see you in person. BrianKilmeade.com. History, liberty, and laughs with Fox Nation.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian.
Hi, everyone. Thanks
Kilmeade.
So much for being here. Brian Kilmeade Show coming your way. What a weekend we had. Everybody was talking about the meltdown in the Oval Office. This hour, we're going to be joined by Jeremy Ogden and Laura Ogden, police investigators. A great new Fox special. And it's just a great Who Did It. It's called Love You to Death, the Kelly Cochran Story, 6 episodes long. And then Jeff Lax is going to be here. He's a City College professor at Kingsborough Community College. He's one of the conservatives who was just horrified about what's happened to New York City schools and the anti-Semitism that is raging. And he has a few wins to talk about. And Michael Goodwin is standing by. He's got an explosive column, too, about the inside story behind the Oval Office meltdown. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
You know, they'd say, like, Trump is a threat to our democracy, which is ironic since he was elected with the majority of the popular vote. They started saying I was a threat to democracy. But if you just replace threat to democracy with threat to bureaucracy, it makes total sense.
Well, there you go. Elon Musk speaking to Joe Rogan. Doge causing controversy every day, but all in the name of fixing a federal government that's about to crash into an economic brick wall. What they plan to do this week and why every federal worker has a homework assignment you have to do. It's in your inbox. Please check it.
Number two.
What the administration is doing, especially with ICE raids in schools, repatriating people in military airplanes for intimidation, talking about housing people on Guantanamo, that's for intimidation.
What's wrong with intimidation, Senator Kelly, to keep people out of our borders and out of people's living rooms? Gloves are off in America and in Mexico as the Trump team is going all in on illegal immigrants and drugs. The main target this week, illegals in blue cities and cartels in Mexico. Both are suddenly under massive pressure.
Number one.
You're gambling with the lives of millions of people. You're gambling with World War III. You're gambling with World War III.
That's a little bit of the explosion that went on for 40 minutes. Ukraine's Zelensky tried to reassemble his NATO support system after Friday's Oval meltdown, watched around the world, and digested wholly with emergency meetings of NATO without the U.S. and within Capitol buildings. Let's bring in Michael Goodwin. Michael has a great column, a disaster in the Oval Office. Dems lead Zelensky, Ukraine off a cliff with pressure to reject mineral deal. Michael, welcome back.
Good morning, Brian. Thank you.
So why are you saying Democrats behind the scenes want Zelensky to walk away from the mineral deal?
Well, I think there's no question that and that they have been telegraphing that to him and advising him on that. In the column, I publish a picture, the Post published a picture of Zelensky before meeting with Trump, meeting with, among others, Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut, who then posted on X a picture of the meeting and said that Zelensky confirmed that he was opposed to the deal that Trump was offering. So when you consider that this happens 40 minutes before he goes to the White House, when you consider that the whole purpose of Zelensky coming to the White House was to sign this deal, and he's already told the Democrats, and the Democrats, I think, are applauding it, at the very least, if not advising it, that he's opposed to it and that he won't sign it. So he comes to the Oval Office under false pretenses. He had no intention of signing that deal when he got there. Now, again, the background, this is the third time that administration officials met with him. Secretary of State Marco Rubio met with him, and Treasury Secretary Bessant met with him. Bessant went to Ukraine specifically to negotiate this deal and to get it signed, and he thought that's what was going to happen. At the last minute, Zelensky refused to sign it. He also refused to sign it with Rubio, but told everybody he would sign it at the White House. Then he tells the Democrats, Chris Murphy and whoever else is there, that he won't sign it. So what the heck is going on here with the Democrats? What role are they playing in advising him? I mean, I thought we had one president at a time. Wasn't that the lecture we got repeatedly before? But if they're helping Zelensky to negotiate a deal and thwart Trump's plans, I don't understand how this is acceptable politically and legally. I mean, yes, Zelensky's free to say no. But why are the Democrats leading him down this road when it's a disaster for Ukraine?
Here's the Treasury Secretary speaking on Face the Nation, Cut 9.
President Zelensky has thrown off the sequencing. And, Margaret, let me tell you the most tragic part of this. Mm-hmm. The President Trump's idea for this economic arrangement was to further intertwine the American people and the Ukrainian people and show no daylight. Show the Russian leadership that there was no daylight, and President Zelensky came into the Oval Office and tried to relitigate in front of the world the deal. And we were going, the place to have done it would have been in the private lunch.
So he's just saying that, you know, he didn't see Scott Bessent. I did not know this. When he went to Ukraine, he was sleeping. So here he is trying to cut a deal, and he disrespected our Secretary of Treasury. And then he came back empty-handed. That ticked Trump off, and he gave that speech, who knows who started the war. We all know who started the war. But now you have a situation where how could a guy this savvy, this smart, to get his country to this point, fall prey to American politics? This guy got an immediate trial by fire through the impeachment. He knows American politics by now. So why would he fall for that?
Let's give him the benefit of the doubt that he really believes this deal is not a great deal for Ukraine. okay, you're fair to make that argument. You know, that's your option, and you're even, you know, fair. It's fair to get advice from Democrats if that's what you want to do, but you don't have the right to demand what you want and then expect to get it. I mean, that's just not how the world works. It's certainly not how Donald Trump works. And if you're dumb enough to think you can get away with it, then you get nothing. And that's what he got. He got kicked out of the White House. I mean, remember when Barack Obama, made Netanyahu yeah. leave by the back door? This is worse. He got kicked out of the White House, and he got nothing. So what kind of negotiator is he? What kind of national leader is he? And as Bessant mentions, the deal was the opening move. It was designed to put American interest in Ukraine. As Trump said, we will move very quickly to a ceasefire, we believe, and then there will be NATO, not NATO troops, but troops from NATO member countries, Great Britain, France, among others, perhaps, who will be there when there's an agreement. They will be peacekeeping forces in Ukraine. So I don't. To me, it's not just Zelensky's arrogance and all of that and stupid backroom dealing with Democrats. It's also that this does seem like a good deal. It may not be perfect, but it was clearly designed to bring an end to the war and to guarantee Ukrainian sovereignty.
So with the,
I mean,
with
what the heck else does he want?
The Europeans are saying we'll put 30,000 troops in. They go, well, we want to know that the American has a backstop. In other words, saying 30,000, 15,000 UK troops and 15,000 French troops aren't enough to divide. You're going to tell me the Russians are going to roll over those troops? What do you think, it's 80 years ago? They say, well, we just want to make sure there's an over-the-top from the America will backstop them. And the president said, I watched the UK fight. They don't really need our help, but don't worry about it. We're not going to leave anything. You know, as if to say, we're going to talk about this later. You know what I think, Michael? I just want this to get back to Putin. Just get the negotiation. Just sign this deal and put it in Russia's lap. Because if they are hollowed out and desperate, like it seems like they are, we will find out if they sincerely are going to stop the fighting. But do you know what their original proposal was on Thursday to a lower delegation? It was knock the million-man force of Ukraine down to 85,000, make it unconstitutional to go past that, give us more land, we don't have enough yet, and we're going to demand new elections. So those are just a few of the things that Ukraine would never, ever go with. So then the pressure would be on Putin. And then the world would say, look, this guy's not being reasonable and he's not budging. So then the feeling is, and General Keane believes this, hey, Vladimir, if you don't back off, you're not going to believe the F-16 fleets that are going to go flooding into Ukraine. You're not going to believe the tanks they're going to get quickly. So you got about a month to come up with a plan, because we're going to arm up Ukraine to push you out of that country, or we could end it right now. So all, we got to get the pressure back on Russia, don't you think?
I do, but I think this plan would have done that.
I do, too.
I mean, that's the great unknown here. What the heck is wrong with Zelensky? I mean, Brian, given what his country has been through, you would think that he would be eager to find any ray of sunshine that would lead past this stumbling block, right? Instead, he puts up more barriers to it. And his behavior, leave aside for a second the substance of it, his behavior was a guaranteed failure. I mean, this, and that's why I said in my column, you know, the general criticism is he didn't read the room. My argument is he read the room. He was reading the wrong room. He was reading the Democrats.
So I have another theory.
Their point of view.
That is probably going to prove correct. Do you know how Netanyahu has a right wing that he's got to worry about? So does Zelensky. And there's a sense that they've sacrificed so much and they've also fought so hard that if you give up this fight and give up this land that all my guys have died for, don't expect to live. So there's been some people who said that, well, this guy's going to need, if he signs this deal, he's going to, and or signs any peace deal without getting that land back, he's going to have to leave the country.
Look, That may be, but the other side of that, Brian, which J.D. Vance raised during the meeting, you have a manpower problem. You know, you are grabbing conscripts off the street, and there are videos of this, of grandmothers and mothers trying to save their sons and grandsons from the military guys who grab them off the streets and impress them into service. I mean, that's how desperate things are in Ukraine, and yet Zelensky, I just, for the life of me, Trump said to him three times, you don't have the cards.
He doesn't, by the way, he doesn't know what that means. I don't think he has any idea what that means.
By the third time, he should have.
it's a second language. Before we go, I want you to hear Governor Chris Christie. This is Governor Christie's theory from Sunday. Cut 15.
I don't think it was a setup, George. I think it was J.D. Vance lit the fuse. And Trump said, okay, his instincts took back over. And what you saw is nothing unusual for Donald Trump. It's highly unusual, as you mentioned, to happen in that kind of setting, but not for him. The second thing I'd say is this shows, again, kind of a lack of an understanding of history and a lack of empathy. Because here's Zelensky. I've been to Ukraine. I sat in his office in August of 23, sandbagged, burlap over the windows. This is a guy under 3 years of siege in his country. Of course he's going to react when J.D. Vance asks him essentially to trust Putin. And he did react. Now, if Zelensky was perfect, he wouldn't have reacted.
How do you feel about his assessment?
I think he's talking to George Stephanopoulos, so there's obviously pressure to blame Trump. I mean, that's what Stephanopoulos does. That's what Chris Christie does. I don't think it adds anything, frankly.
Yeah.
I think this is a yes or no question. You know, should Zelensky have taken the deal? And to blame Vance, to blame Trump, it's ridiculous. Trump was incredibly gracious to him when they arrived. I mean, he sat there with Zelensky showing him photographs of prisoners and things. I think Trump has been incredibly gracious, but he has also been consistent that he needed to stop the war. I first heard him say that in 3 years ago exactly, in March of 22, I interviewed Trump. And he talked, this is right after the war began, and he talked about ending it. He has always talked about ending it. He often said 24 hours. But this is a deal that he's offered that would end it. That has, I should say, has a very good chance of ending it. It's the best deal. It's the best possibility on the table. And that, for Zelensky to not just turn it down, but to be so contentious and so nasty in that meeting, it just defies any kind of defense of his mindset. I think he came in there determined to fight with Trump, and he could have done it privately. He chose to do it publicly. He went through all the yellow lights. He just sped forward, and I think thinking he has the Democrats in his pocket, that the Democrats will do this, is just an ignorant reading of American politics.
Michael, you're 100% right. If the Democrats had taken, if this is the midterms and the Democrats had flipped the House and the Senate, I go, well, he's got to wait 2 years until Trump's out. And Democrats seem to have momentum. That's a risky play. But we're 1 month into a term when the Republicans are ruling the roost and the Democrats don't know what the hell they're doing. Their best offense is play possum. And those are the people he's betting on. He's too smart for that. I just think I can't believe what we're witnessing. We're talking about it. But the good news is we don't need reporters. We watched it.
Yeah, even the interview with Bret Baier, he had numerous opportunities to correct himself, and he didn't. And he didn't over the weekend. He put out a long statement Saturday. You know, we need security guarantees. We need security guarantees. He's still negotiating that point. I mean, get a life. I mean, you have to deal with the facts as they are, not what you want them to be.
Michael, thank you. As you know, we're up against it. We took every bit of juice out of this segment, so I have no time next segment. Michael Goodwin, thanks so much. New York Post, exciting time. Reader's column, disaster in the Oval Office. Back in a moment.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade.
The The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
President Trump met with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky yesterday. Trump repeatedly scolded Zelensky, telling him, "You have real problems." Yeah, man, he's in a war. No one's asking to borrow missiles so they can take the party to the next level. Zelensky was asked to leave the White House. Then he appeared on Fox News and said he thinks he can still salvage his relationship with President Trump, which is like Justin Baldoni saying, "I'd love to work with Blake again."
That's pretty funny. That was pretty cool. And, you know, did you see the cold open? The cold open was ridiculously biased and against Trump, as if they put Zelensky into a trap. But, I mean, I don't expect anything less. They used to not be like that, but I don't expect anything less. I also still turned to SNL, though. The first thing I watched it yesterday. I should have told you guys that I watched yesterday, and there was some funny stuff on there. But even though people are critical of SNL, I still find I gotta watch. And by the way, Shane Gillis was the host, and he went out with typical Shane Gillis humor. But some of the jokes were very funny. But he goes, "Yeah, I can understand you guys are a little liberal to like this," because he talked about "I'll miss Trump" during the debates. And just had a thought they were a normal audience. Maybe at some point he didn't realize that his audience was really at home, that they weren't there. But I thought he did great. And I thought it was funny stuff. And I also knew what was funnier is that nobody in the audience knew Shane thought it was funny. That made it great for me.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
And the Oscar goes to No Other Land.
About 2 months ago, I became a father and my hope to my daughter that she will not have to live the same life I'm living now, always fearing settlers' violence, home demolitions, and forest-built displacements that my community, Masafer Yatta, is living and facing every day under the Israeli occupation. No Other Land reflects the harsh reality that we have been enduring for decades and still persist as we call on the world to take serious actions to stop the injustice and to stop the ethnic cleansing of Palestinian people.
So that is No Other Land. That one best documentary yesterday was Palestinian and Israeli. Talk about getting along. And, of course, that's a real fair and balanced look. I feel bad for his daughter. Probably is a hellacious upbringing. Why are you letting Hamas run your region? Why are you letting them? Why are you supporting and possibly cheering as a parent and maybe a documentarian high-fiving after the October 7th attacks? Guess why they were in Gaza? There's only one reason to be in Gaza, because you went out and massacred. You captured almost 200 people, over 200 people, and then you massacred over 1,000 others, and you don't expect to get any retribution? So I don't know if the Hollywood crowd loves that statement, but I just don't get it, because there's so many Jewish Americans in California who are extremely powerful and popular, but they seem to go silent. With me right now is Jeff Lax, CUNY Law Professor at Kingsborough Community College and founder of SAFE, S-A-F-E, it's an acronym, campus, which advocates for Zionist Jews discriminated against and excluded on college campuses. Jeff, first off, your reaction to that win.
Well, the win itself is disgusting, too. I thought you were going in a different direction. The win itself is disgusting because the movie is full of propaganda and lies. It rewrites history of 1948. What they don't say, they talk about the quote-unquote Nakba, the expelling of the Palestinians from the land of Israel. But the truth is that the Palestinians left because they were helping the other Arab countries attack Israel. They left on purpose to assist in what was to be the destruction of the Jews in Israel. That was what happened in 1948.
Didn't they reject the whole agreement?
Yeah.
And they left. And they said they want all of it.
That's right.
But were there Palestinian even people? Was there such thing as Palestinians?
No, there isn't. It's not something that I personally talk about a lot because that's not my background. But there really is no historical Palestinian people. They were really part of Jordan for many, many years. And then
and
after
what happened
67.
There?
And they attacked Israel like all the other countries.
And they got kicked out of Jordan.
And they got kicked. Their ass got kicked.
Yeah.
And Israel took over those lands.
And Jordan says, "We don't want you here." And then Egypt said the same thing, right?
Yes.
They wreak havoc.
Nobody wants them. None of the Arab countries will take the Palestinians.
But they want to blame Israel for not taking them when they have shown time and time again they don't want to live next to Israel.
And I just came back from Israel, Brian. To call it ethnic cleansing is so disgusting. I had so many amazing relationships with Arab and Muslim people while I was there. Try to find a Jew in Palestine. Tell me if you can find a Jew there. If there's a Jew
in Gaza or West Bank.
Yeah. If a Jew missteps and gets in there, they'll be killed.
Right. So let's talk about what's happening with our schools in the system. You got a win, didn't you, at City College?
Yes, we did. We got two big wins over the last couple of weeks. One of them was Governor Hochul telling CUNY to take down an ad for what was an anti-Semitic course that, to be clear, the Board of Trustees, the highest level of CUNY, Bill Thompson, really want to name his name, voted to pass. And the curriculum basically called Israel a settler colonial state, apartheid, and genocidal. And she did. I've been very critical of her. And you mentioned on Friday on Fox and Friends that part of this is that Richie Torres is coming for her job, going to primary her. And
He's a Bronx lawmaker.
Right. National. Okay.
Democrat.
Yes. Yes. But very, very charismatic, very far left, but very strong, ironically, on Israel and the Jewish issues.
In a huge rally 2 weeks ago, he was one of the keynote speakers for the Jewish. By the way, everyone should be. If I found out Muslims were being beat up across in New York for being Muslim, I'd be just as outraged.
100%.
What's going on?
100%.
There's nothing to do with white people, black people. Just all of a sudden, Israelis are being beat up. Or how about this? What's your take on what happened to Barnard College last week?
Yeah, and I just want to say, by the way, to piggyback on your point, most of my students are Palestinian. I've been teaching for over 20 years at CUNY. I've never had an issue. I get along great with them. I support them. And I do think that Palestinians are victims in Gaza. You know why? Hamas.
Or the Palestinian Authority who's stealing money from them.
That's right.
And Yasser Arafat's one of the richest people in the world with all Western money. So, and he died, and I guess his widow has it. But what happened at Barnard? Again, we thought we were past this. They stormed into a school, took over a building, and they beat up one of the security officials, all because two anti-Israel students or intruder students were burst into a classroom and were tossed out of the school for doing that and disrupting and screaming anti-Semitic phrases.
Right. And the administration, as usually, capitulates to these goons. And unbelievable to me and sick that they want to meet with them. You don't meet with people like this. It is sickening.
But the whole thing is, too, I think this has got to come from Trump. He does not mind getting involved with congestion pricing. He's got to get involved with this anti-Semitic action that's happening on campus. This is not going away. Now you got Jamal Bowman, a congressman, Jeff Lacks, who's launching a super PAC to defeat pro-Israel politicians from Yonkers to Gaza.
And this goes in line with what you guys were reporting on Friday about the Democratic Party being more anti-Israel than ever. And you're seeing it here. Terrible. But I was mentioning to you right before we went on today that Leo Terrell now is starting an anti-Semitism task force. So to answer your question about Trump, and they're going after 10 colleges. I want him to add an 11th, CUNY, mine. But right now they're doing a great job. I can't wait to see what they do.
Yeah, and we just want people to be treated equally because your religion. Are we still at this point in this country you don't understand? There's going to be ramifications if you crack down on somebody for their religion. This Joanne Arioli was on Fox and Friends first on the two Democrat New York lawmakers proposing jail time for protesters waving any terrorist flag like Hamas or Hezbollah. Listen.
We've already criminalized burning crosses, swastikas, and nooses. Why not this new wave of how to threaten and terrorize people who are of a certain religion or a certain ethnicity? It makes sense. I hope that it does make it out of committee and onto the floor. And I hope that the governor signs it. And I'm willing to put in a supporting resolution for it.
What do you think?
I think you got to be careful. I'm a lawyer.
Democratic lawmaker.
Yeah, I'm a lawyer. So I always worry about how these things are drafted. Because well-meaning legislation often gets thrown out in the courts because it's not drafted well. We've seen this many times with anti-BDS laws. Some of them are well-written, some of them are not. And that makes all the difference. So I worry about legislation like this. I support it in spirit, but you got to be careful about free speech because, you know, for example, I know a lot of people who fly American flags next to Israeli flags. And, you know, there's a rule in the United States. You can't fly a foreign flag unless it's below the American flag. So got to be careful about that. But I agree with it in spirit that you don't want, obviously, violence coming out of this. The mask thing has to happen. You can't allow
the banning the mask.
The banning
obviously.
That has to happen.
So Governor Hochul was direct and gave you some hope when she banned Palestinian studies instructor to teach courses steeped in anti-Semitism. She banned those courses. Did that please you at Hunter College?
Yeah, she didn't ban the courses. I don't think she has the authority to ban courses. She banned the ad to teach the course. So now there's a lot of backlash. After your show, by the way, I got contacted by a lot of people telling me these courses are still going to happen. And actually, there might be more courses. Yeah, there might be more courses like this because even though she got rid of the ad, they may still find someone else to teach it without that language that was in the ad. So the school itself has to take action because Hochul only has so much authority. There is a theory. There is a concept of academic freedom. And faculty offer the courses. I don't think she has the authority to ban the course, or at least it's arguable. She banned the ad that taught the course. We hope the course goes away, but that's really up to the school.
The department chairperson served on the campus curriculum for 16 years. I can tell you there's no curriculum ever gets approved until the university or a board of trustees voted to affirm it. And Thompson and the board of trustees voted to approve those courses. So you're saying that they're going to go on as scheduled, which is crazy. But I would add this. As long as the governor spends money funding the city college, they do have a little bit of leverage. Now, I could just say, listen, until you straighten this out and get rid of these hate classes, you're not going to get your money from the state. And, of course, they're going to sue back. But that begins to bring more attention on courses that they don't want a lot of attention on.
Not only that, the governor controls the Board of Trustees. She nominates the members of the Board of Trustees, and they hire the chancellor. They could get rid of the chancellor like that, and that's what I'm advocating for.
So the governor might not have the power to directly get rid of the courses, but all she has to do is pick up the phone and offer these threats. That's indirectly getting rid of the courses.
That's true, and I think she should get rid of the chancellor.
All right. Jeff, thanks so much. Best of luck. His latest article is the top city college honchos okayed anti-Semitic Hunter College course. Now heads must roll. Even the governor brought that up. Are you happy that Cuomo is going to run for mayor?
The last question is always so tough, Brian. I have very mixed feelings towards Cuomo. I'm still processing this. Okay.
I don't think he should be running for mayor. I don't think you get kicked out as governor and then run for mayor as a consolation prize.
I tend to agree. I tend to agree.
There you go. Thanks so much, Jeff Lax. Great job.
Thank you.
All right, back in a moment with a story you're going to only hear and watch on Fox Nation. Jeremy Ogden and Laura Ogden join us, police investigators, with a new Fox series called Love You to Death, the Kelly Cochran story. They're going to give us an idea what those six episodes are about. Absolutely astounding.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
When we left and cleared the scene at 10 o'clock that night, shortly thereafter, I got a phone call from one of the neighbors saying, you know, just want to let you know that, you know, as soon as you guys left here, the Cochrans packed up their vehicle and they were gone. So once the neighbor told me that they bailed, I contacted Jim McNeil and I just let him know, hey, just an FYI, they took off. He had put a GPS on their truck, and he says, looking at the GPS, you could see that they were at Kelly's parents in Hobart, Indiana. Right then, I thought, if that's not guilt, I don't know what is.
Wow, that is the voice of Laura Ogden and Jeremy Ogden, police investigators, new Fox News series called Love You to Death, the Kelly Cochran Story. This is the tale of Kelly Cochran. And the best way to get your primer is to say this. A Michigan woman convicted of killing her husband and at least one other man is accused of several other crimes. They finally get her and they find out so much more that Kelly Cochran did. With me right now is Laura Ogden and Jeremy Ogden. Welcome, guys.
Thank you. It's so great to be here.
So that was your voice. You're a natural voiceover person, by the way. Did you feel natural when you were doing this?
No. Actually, there were a couple of times where the producer, Rob, was like, hold on, Laura, could you please act a little more excited here?
Excited about a murder.
Yeah.
So first off, who discovered Kelly Cochran first and that there might be some problem?
Well, I worked on this case for my missing subject for a good year and a half before Jeremy got involved.
In Michigan?
In Upper Michigan, yes. On the Wisconsin border. It's like about 6 hours north of Hobart, Indiana.
And what were you investigating?
I was investigating a missing person, missing from our town.
Who was it?
His name was Chris Riggin.
Okay.
An old friend of his reported him missing, and actually he had been missing for about 2 weeks prior to her reporting it. So kind of gave us not a head
start. Does that happen a lot in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan?
We get a lot of, missing people because we get a lot of hunters, snowmobilers, fishermen, that
legitimately missing.
They get lost. And so that's kind of what you think at first. Chris Riggin was a hike, he liked to hike. He was a wilderness guy. So at first my mind was thinking, maybe he went out hiking. He doesn't know the area very well because he was fairly new to the area. And so at first that's where my mind was going with it. Maybe he got lost out there. There was a little bit of a, worry just about that in itself because it was October, late October, so the temperatures get very cold at night there.
Right.
So, but I think very quickly we ruled out the fact that he was missing and realized that there was something wrong.
And then you're pursuing him how? Kelly Cochran how? Or the guy? Were you pursuing the same guy?
No.
So what happens is ultimately they flee after Laura executes a search warrant on their home and kind of turns up the heat on them, and they come back to Hobart, Indiana. And during that time, I was actually on sick leave. So a little bit of time went by, and then while I was back to work, I got a tip from the FBI tip line that possibly she had murdered her husband because he had been transported by ambulance to the hospital that weekend.
Okay.
So then ensues an autopsy, that investigation. And quickly, I reached out to Laura and said, I need you to share
who you didn't know.
I had no idea who Laura was. And I reached out to her and said, look, it's very important that I get every aspect of your case in order to try to be able to figure out exactly who this person is and how to get to her.
All right. And you were willing to cooperate. Let's just find this guy.
Oh, yeah.
And find her.
I'm like, whatever you need, I'm going to send it right now. Because I'd been working on this, like I said, for about a year and a half at this point, and I just wanted closure. I wanted justice for the family.
So bring us together. What happens next?
He calls me. It was the day that we found out that Jason Cochran was dead. I had gotten a call from the FBI, and then Jeremy also got a call from the FBI saying, hey, Jason Cochran's dead. I was on day one of a jury trial for another homicide case that I worked on. It was a child case. So Jeremy reached out to me and said, this is Jeremy Ogden. I'm a detective here. I just found out Jason's dead. And that's where we communicated about, send me all your stuff.
And who's this woman?
Yeah. So it's really important for me to be able to get the entire backstory, figure out how everything comes together and kind of develop a plan to get the only person who's still alive to tell me what happened to not only what she did to her husband, but find the missing man.
What do you find out what did you find out about the couple as you pursued it?
Well, initially, even before Jeremy entered the picture, I kept thinking there's something's wrong with this couple. We need to research and see if there are any unsolved homicides in the Indiana area that would have prompted them to, because why would they move, all the way up to Upper Michigan, which is the middle of nowhere? What prompted that move? So we were on to something's not right. After the FBI conducted a search warrant at the residence and wasn't able to turn up any DNA, we knew something wasn't right. This is a couple that's possibly done this before. And then as we worked and continued working on Kelly after she murdered Jason, Jeremy and I working together, it became pretty obvious that this was not their first time.
Right. Here is here's the cop, Kelly Cochran being questioned by a cop. Cut 34.
I asked Kelly Cochran about her relationship with Chris Riggin, and she told me that they'd had a relationship. Her husband is standing there. I said, is your husband aware of this relationship? She said, yes, he is. Jason Cochran was not saying a word. He was very stoic, didn't say anything, just like a statue.
So this is it's a six-part series. It's on Fox Nation right now. And when Kelly Cochran's caught is the biggest story, which you find out, which is she is...
Oh, possible serial killer.
Yeah.
It's not just a one-off.
No.
There's others. It's obvious that they've done this before. They're very methodical at it, and we have to seek the truth for the rest of the
matter. All right, check it out on Fox Nation. It's called Love You to Death, the Kelly Cochran story. Jeremy Ogden, Laura Ogden, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. Exciting time. We have a big address to the nation. Address to, what do we call it, Jason Chaffetz?
Address to Congress.
Join Address to Congress, because it's not the
same. I don't know why they have two names.
Right. Because the president didn't have to do this, right? He wants to.
Oh, correct. They all do it.
Do they all do it first year?
I've been to 10 of them.
But first year, even after the inaugural address?
First year, of course, nationwide audience. They like this.
It's always good. The Biden addresses were so moving that we'd just be yelled at the whole time, right? It was like, look at how alive he is. He's yelling. He's angry. Okay, is that good? Can you just freaking talk? Can you just explain to us what you're doing?
Just read the prompter.
Yeah, whatever. But it's great to see you. Bottom of the hour, Gordon Sondland, a former U.S. ambassador to the European Union under President Trump, will be on. But we got a lot going on. First and foremost, the aftermath of Friday. If you are, what school are you in that Trump just reacted the only way possible, that Zelensky wanted to blow this thing up? Do you believe that both sides are at fault? What do you think?
I thought one of the more important interviews was the one Laura Ingraham did with Secretary Bessent. I mean, he laid out that Zelensky's had three different chances to sign this agreement. You know, one question is maybe they should have got the deal signed before he sat down in the Oval Office with the cameras rolling. But I think the president let it go. I mean, it went for 40 minutes, and it went the wrong direction. I think you can only blame Zelensky in that case.
But the thing is, it's not really typical to answer 10 questions. I mean, usually, if Joe Biden used to just sit there and say, don't answer.
Well, and they would never do. Look, I give a lot of credit for Donald Trump to doing this out in the open, being Mr. Transparent.
Here's a little of the exchange cut to.
He broken this ceasefire. He killed our people, and he didn't exchange prisoners. We signed the exchange of prisoners, but he didn't do it. What kind of diplomacy, JD, you are speaking about? What do you mean?
I'm talking about the kind of diplomacy that's going to end the destruction of your country.
Yes, but if you
Mr. President, with respect, I think it's disrespectful for you to come into the Oval Office and try to litigate this in front of the American media.
Trump then scolding the wartime leader.
You're not in a good position. You don't have the cards right now. With us, you start having
cards.
Right.
He didn't know cards. I mean, obviously, I don't think he knows what that phrase meant.
Like language, yeah.
Right.
But, I mean, this is a big, big mistake by Zelensky. You get the United States invested into your country. They have a invested interest in it. Donald Trump's doing right. I mean, I heard him be very critical of previous presidents related to Kuwait and to Iraq, saying, hey, we should have been paid through oil for all of the blood.
Trump has always said that.
He's always taken that position. So, and look, you're in a better position against Putin if the United States is in there, you know, with an interest in the rare earth minerals. That makes it easier to negotiate. But he didn't take that offer. So, okay, what solution do you have? Because this war's been raging on. Hundreds of thousands of people have died. I don't know the exact number. What other solution do you have?
So here's more. I just want people to get up today because a lot of times you're not off at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It goes for 50 minutes.
Right.
50 minutes. Cut four.
You're gambling with the lives of millions of people. You're gambling with World War III. You're gambling with World War III. And what you're doing is very disrespectful to the country, this country. That's back to you. Far more than a lot of people said they should have.
Have you said thank you once? This entire meeting? No, in this entire meeting, have you said thank you?
So he did say thank you a lot in the past. I mean, he always starts out like that. Do you believe this? At one point, you would think by the time you get to Bret Baier, you realize, I got to get this deal done.
Well, then he eventually sent out some sort of X post out there saying, oh, well, you know, thank you to the American people. Finally, probably got some of the message from some of the staff. But one thing I want to note is, look, Russia's notorious for not living up to its agreements. If you look at what they did in Georgia, they took over 20% of the country of Georgia. They signed agreements that they were going to just be there temporarily and pull out, and they never did. I went there, and they showed me with these big binoculars. They take you out there, and they show you how they're changing temporary structures to permanent structures, and they have no intent of leaving. So you got to be careful with that. But you've got to be able to have Europe, the United States, pushing to get this deal done.
Well, the whole thing is, too, is that he's 100% right that Putin can't be trusted. And there's an excellent chance that when push comes to shove, Putin's going to be intransigent, and he is not going to want to move. And then all the pressure's on Russia. If you just get to the point where both sides can talk and then come together, you will see if Russia, unless they are really hollowed out and things are that desperate, which could be the choice, or they might say to themselves, we tried this whole isolation thing with China and Iran. It's not going well. Trump is in new. Maybe I can deal with this guy. Maybe they think that that's the case. But unless they come aboard and say, okay, we'll take the current lines. All right, we'll stop fighting now. Yeah. And then, oh, you want to put 30,000 European troops across the border in Ukraine? Okay. If they say that, then you got a deal. Because that, the difference will be the tripwire of the British and the French troops. But if they say no troops and we say no problem, and if they say, well, we're going to take more land, and we say no problem, and they say, oh, I want you to only have an 85,000-man army instead of a 1-million-man army, and we say no problem, I got a huge problem with that.
Yeah, that creates all kinds of problems.
Because that's like what Russia's saying to our delegation.
Well, and look, remember, go back to the beginning when Biden said, well, if it's just a small incursion, maybe it's not a problem. There was no clear line there. There's a reason why they made this move under Biden. And for 3 years, the war has just raged. It's cost us hundreds of billions of dollars, and it doesn't seem to have the type of progress. Now, I think it probably thwarted their ability. I thought one of the strongest lines that Trump threw out there was, look, Obama gave you sheets and blankets. We give you javelins. If you didn't have those javelins, you would not have survived. So be a little grateful to the United States of America, but we're not an endless piggy bank.
Here's what Senator Amy Klobuchar said, Cut 11.
It was Vice President Vance, particularly, who was on the offense, who was berating President Zelensky, who simply was trying to explain that this was, in fact, we needed a strong security commitment from all of our allies to be able to have a lasting peace, which is something that President Trump says that he wants to see.
I just disagree with
well,
her.
Well, did you watch the other channels? They all went after GD.
Oh, he was yelling. I mean, he wasn't yelling. I mean, even President jumped in and said he didn't raise his voice. Did he take a strong position? Yes. And I saw, look, I saw Senator Kelly out of Arizona say, oh, well, Marco Rubio should have been in the room. He was in the room. I mean, their fact pattern is so wrong on this. But I'm glad it's done in the tape. Again, I give huge credit for Trump to doing this out in the public, because most of these things would never, ever see the light of day.
All right. I just want to get it into Russia's hands and then see where we go, because they started it. This is all on them. Don't tell me NATO expanded and got too close to Russia. They had no choice. This has been a disaster for them. Think about this. Finland and Sweden and Norway are now part of NATO. Now, these two of those nations just joined after this. Now you have all NATO nations committed to going not only to, but getting closer to 5% GDP. Yeah. They are bringing them to Europe together for the first time in 60, 70 years by your inactions. And you have a U.S. president and a Republican Party that doesn't want to fully arm Ukraine because of the slow walking of Joe Biden. Remember, no HIMARS, no F-16s, no Patriot missiles. Then they get them all. Remember, no tanks. I mean, that's what you were forcing.
Total mixed message.
Yeah, total mixed message. Slow increase. When they shocked everybody by pushing the Russians back and keeping Kyiv. That's why he sarcastically said, yeah, I know, we're only going to last 3 days. We're only going to last 2 weeks. Right. We would have lasted because they're better fighters. They're Western trained. the fight.
Well, look, and it's their homeland. They're fighting for everything, right? And so this has been an absolute disaster for Russia, for Putin. This is not going their direction. It's cost them a lot of treasure, a lot of people, a demoralization mm-hmm. throughout the country. And if you can't blow in as a supposed superpower, now, look, they have nukes, so you can always be careful and take them seriously, but yikes, not good for Putin.
I want to talk about immigration because people are focused on the border, and they should. And the record number, record low numbers, it must be stunning Democrats who yeah. swore that wouldn't be the case. Yeah. Remember, we're in a period of migration as a planet. You know, the Incas are moving west across the Bering Strait, which becomes an isthmus, or an isthmus becomes a Bering Strait. More on that later. So, you know, everyone just moves. But wait a second. Now they stop moving. Why do they stop moving? Because the first six stops of Marco Rubio's Secretary of State reign were in South, Central and South American countries. What do you need to stop it? You're going to need to stop this influx. Goes to Panama. I'm worried about the I'm worried about people coming up through the Darien Pass. I'm worried about people coming up there. And now we find out that we're focusing on the cartels. Story in the New York Times. Mexico authorities are going after the Sinaloa cartel. They've already made 900 arrests. We have put 3,000 troops to the border. Now, why would we do that? I think they're getting ready to strike like it's Al-Qaeda or ISIS.
I hope so.
But that would be huge to do that.
It's a massive move. You don't think it was just a change, the climate change was solved? That's why they stopped migrating?
Let me ask Eric, do you know if it's climate change? I think it's climate change.
Yeah, climate change, according to Kamala Harris, yeah, that's the reason that they're... Yeah,
that's the reason.
That was the reason
it's
they were coming.
It's probably our fault.
It must be over now because they're not coming.
But don't worry, I got Visa to open up a shop there. So there you go.
So, but seriously, Peter Schweitzer's book, you know, more than a year ago that came out that highlighted how the Chinese are highly involved here. They own the port where they bring in the precursors and the pill presses. They have the facility there in northern Mexico to make all of these fake drugs and to do the fentanyl. And there are thousands of Chinese nationals working in those labs to put those together. They hand it over to the Sinaloa cartel. Sinaloa cartel does the distribution. And then guess what? The money laundering goes back through the Chinese and the Chinese banks as opposed to Central and South America, where they used to traditionally do it.
So this is
and so there are very targeted places. They know exactly where they can take out these facilities.
And you know that China could stop it in 2 seconds. They have total control of that country, those borders,
totally.
the ports. So now they got a 10% tariffs coming on China. They're keeping their powder dry. They know that that sometimes Trump changes his mind. But if I'm President Trump, from what I can see, he's getting what he wanted.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't I don't see a reason to put the tariffs on. Why? I mean, they're doing what you want. You got to reward this behavior or just say, I'm going to postpone it another month and cite the reason. So it doesn't look like he's backing off. You don't want to do that. And then in the north, they have a fentanyl czar now, and we have seen physical assets. You know, 1% of the fentanyl comes to the northern border. We've seen the helicopters, and I talked to a Buffalo police chief. He says, you know, we're getting a lot of communication with Toronto now.
Yeah.
So this is what he wanted. Take the win.
Take the
what
win.
What am I missing?
Evidently, he's going to make an announcement about how I think it's Honda is going to move their facility from Mexico to the United States. Hopefully that happens. It's like 210,000 cars that are going to be built in the United States as opposed to Mexico. The president at the joint address of Congress is going to have to explain the tariffs because I think when he talks about reciprocity, the idea that if you don't have a tariff, then you won't get a tariff. That I just want them to be the same. That makes a lot of sense to me and I think to most people. And I think that if you got very specific examples of where there's a tariff in place for somebody else, and yet our people here in the United States can't sell our stuff over in Europe or wherever it might be, then it starts to make sense. But he's got to explain that, I think.
He will. Jason,
no doubt.
All you have to do is call him. And you tell him to explain it and he will. back in a moment, Brian Kilmeade Show. When we come back, we're going to talk about Doge. And what Elon Musk said to Joe Rogan.
Illuminating, intriguing, inculcating.
I know some of these words.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
If you pay taxes and you don't like that you have to pay so much in taxes, and then you find out that there's significant fraud and waste that's been exposed, you should be celebrating.
Probably saw, like, you know, they'd say, like, Trump is a threat to our democracy, which is ironic since he was elected with a majority of the, you know, popular vote. They started saying I was a threat to democracy. But if you just replace threat to democracy with threat to bureaucracy, it makes total sense.
So that's just an excerpt of a 3-hour conversation, Joe Rogan and Elon Musk. And the blowback that Elon Musk is getting, you know, they're protesting in front of Tesla stores. They said, do yourself a favor, burn a Tesla. So please tell me where he benefits from doing what he's doing.
I mean, he's doing this country.
Zero benefit.
Look, Democrats should get behind this. They should be wanting to root out the waste, fraud, and abuse. Why? That's not supposedly a partisan issue, but evidently it is. I mean, and the statistics they're giving out with, you know, are just unbelievable. Senator Mike Lee tweeted out there, like, millions of credit cards, like 2 million more credit cards than there are government employees.
Yeah, so and they list them on Doge.com, by the
yeah.
way. But you know what I want to see them accrue? I want to see this numbers accrue in some organized way. Like, you'll tell me an anecdote, and I'll hear an anecdote,
right.
and I'm outraged. I'm hearing it on Joe Rogan. But there just seems to be there's organization in their effort, but not an overseeing to the point where I know they're reporting, where I can see an overall tally that makes sense, that is accountable.
Ultimately, I think it needs to get to the cabinet secretaries, and they need to take agency by agency and say, all right, Doge, thank you. Here's what we're seeing. Here's the difference that we're making. Here's the money that is saved. And here, by the way, are the reasons that we're letting these people go. You know, 800 people let go at NOAA. Somebody needs to explain that and then make it happen.
So the whole nuclear NNSA, they handle the nuclears and to maintain them. Yeah. Some are older than us.
Yeah.
And they went in there and just arbitrarily fired people. Then they realized, oh, my goodness, we got to hire 55 back. But one email says, just locked you out, you're fired, and you're locked out of your computer, which I think is too callous. I really do. And then when they go to get back on, they've got an email that says, disregard last email, you're hired again. So there's got to be some type of personal interaction. I don't hate federal workers. If you are skewering the government, I hate you.
Yes.
But if you're not, and I, in my mind, I like to think better of people. So then I'm thinking the story was, leave it alone. But then it says this expert, NSA is failing. It's focused on nuclear weapons that this Heritage Foundation did. Look, most of the weapons in the arsenal are older than the average American. The firings did not appear to be driven by a plan to improve the agency. Instead, just compiled a list of people to cut the agency. Now that these secretaries are hired, even though they've only been there for a handful of time, identify the managers that you can trust. And then you go back to him and go, I need this cut by a third. I need this cut by a third. And make sure these people, anyone in the office, they're fired. But I don't think from the Doge person that walks in, goes to a computer, and uses some of their genius and their organization skills to cut people in personally. I think it's an unnecessary hit on the effort.
Yeah, especially it's embarrassing when you have to hire them back. The reality is in our nuclear arsenal, and I have been into one of those nuclear silos, as a member of Congress. And do you remember that movie, The War Games, where they sit down and they're far apart and they got to turn the keys simultaneously? It really is exactly like that. And so you have people that some of this technology is so old that it hasn't been replenished, that if you fire somebody, you can't just hire somebody new and say, hey, go in there. I mean, literally at the Pentagon, we had a hearing about this. They do, if you do a promotion or give somebody a promotion or you get a salary change, guess what? You got to fill out a punch card. You know how many people service punch cards? Nobody goes to school for that. You can't just fire them.
Right. I hear you. And then you modernize that. Those people are necessary, sadly. Then they move on. But I don't think you do it from 3,000 feet.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So hopefully they'll change that, because I love the mission. The mission is great. Jason Chavis, thanks so much.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I hope this could all be reset. I hope he comes to the realization that we're actually trying to help his country here before it suffers thousands of more casualties, Why is any of this good for anybody? And the argument that we're going to just keep it going forever? That's absurd. We are trying to end a war. You cannot end a war unless both sides come to the table, starting with the Russians. I'm not promising you it's possible. I'm not telling you it's 90% likely. I'm saying it's 0% likely if we don't get them to a negotiating table.
So that is Secretary of State Marco Rubio responding to the aftermath of that blowout in the Oval Office. So where do we go from here? He said, well, we got to get it to the Russians, but we can't do that unless we have an agreement and a united front to sit down and talk about. Gordon Sondland joins us now, good friend of the show, former U.S. ambassador to the European Union under President Trump. Ambassador, welcome back. Where would you go? We've already been through what's going on in the Oval Office. Probably never happened like that again. Have you seen some of that exchange behind the scenes with higher-ups like that?
Well, of course. But, Brian, nice to be with you again. I think, you know, there's been no greater supporter of Zelensky and Ukraine than me. But I think Zelensky really miscalculated on this one. I think he was told from the get-go there would be no explicit security guarantees, that the security guarantees would come in the form of massive U.S. involvement and investment in the country, lots of boots on the ground in terms of business people in suits, not military people, and that that would give us the opening to go to Putin and say, look, you attack Ukraine once we're there. It's not a proxy war anymore. You're going against us directly, and the planes that will be flying, if you do that, will not be piloted by Ukrainians. They'll be piloted by U.S. pilots because you're directly hurting American interests. And that's a better guarantee for Zelensky than anything he would get from NATO or otherwise.
Right. In other words, you don't think he wanted to sign it. He didn't mind this whole thing blew up. And now when he comes out and says, I'll take the deal— what do you think happened over the weekend? He had a love fest with other European leaders.
Well, it's very ironic that those European leaders with whom he had a love fest are being completely hypocritical. I mean, it's almost comical. You know, for 1 minute they say they berate President Trump for blowing up the meeting and making a cash grab on Ukrainian assets. And criticizing him for not agreeing to the security guarantees. But then when the European media asks members of parliament in the UK or the leadership of the EU, are you prepared to put peacekeepers on the ground? They go, well, we're not sure we want to put our boys and girls or young men and women in Ukraine to help protect U.S. interests. So they literally are all over the map on this thing, Brian.
Well, I think that when by the time the prime minister of England left, I thought he said we're going to look to put 30,000 troops and the UK troops would be there. And then when Trump was asked with him there, with Starmer there, he said, these guys are great fighters. They don't need our help. But we'll see. That's something that can be worked out later. I just want to get this deal to the Russians and see how sincere they are. And my tongue is firmly in my cheek. I don't really think they are sincere unless, as usual, we have totally miscalculated how weak Russia is right now.
Well, what's very interesting is that if he makes a deal with Zelensky on the rare earth and other things, and again, I think that's the tip of the iceberg. I think there's going to be a lot of additional investment in other sectors. There are going to be people there. All of a sudden, as we start moving people into Ukraine, even while the fighting is going on initially, if Putin declines to have a ceasefire or a deal, then all of a sudden it changes things dramatically because now he's attacking American interests and he's going to have to really recalculate. And I think that's the box that Trump is trying to put him in. And you can't put him in that box by just criticizing him, which is why he's declined to call him a dictator and call him a ruthless butcher, all of which he is, by the way. But, you know, why rub it in? It's not going to change anything.
So here's Kim Strassel, a deep thinker from The Wall Street Journal. Cut 16.
What's really coming to play here, though, is that much deeper issues than not really just gratitude. I almost feel that's become a little bit of an excuse. There's a deep reluctance, and I get it, among Ukrainians to accept a deal in which there is no assurances that Russia isn't going to do this again. And that's the problem, is Russia has repeatedly done this, repeatedly broken its promises. And I appreciate Donald Trump's point that, well, they don't want to mess mess with him. They respect him. They won't make a move when he's in office. True, maybe that is actually true. But Donald Trump is not going to be in office forever. 3 years from now, 4 years from now, what is Ukraine left with to help make sure that that Russia doesn't come and take yet more of it?
So that's who we want. And he was trying to say that in the Oval Office. I think you agree. Yeah, they have deals. They had deals in 2014. We had a deal in 1997. You know, we have a deal, and they kept fighting afterwards. But they can't be trusted unless there's some type of security guarantee, unless there's a wall built and there are international troops on the ground, since you don't want to make me part of NATO.
Well, I think the difference is that in those previous years, the U.S. did not have an overwhelming interest in Ukraine in terms of a financial tie and lots of U.S. personnel against civilians on the ground there. And I think that once Trump sets this up accordingly, it's going to be incumbent on his successor, Democrat or Republican, to follow through. And I think that's a new model for protecting countries instead of having sort of this amorphous democracy is good, communism is bad. We need to stand up for democracy and spend countless lives and trillions of dollars. I think there should be a more tangible interest at the same time, which is to have, you know, significant investment, significant exchange. And that is also a counter to China's Belt and Road Initiative. I mean, it's so many good things for Ukraine. Why Zelensky won't take yes for an answer is beyond me.
You know, there's a theory that he's got a right wing, too, and they told him he better not say yes, just like Netanyahu's got to deal with that as well.
Very true. But you know something? Gradual incrementalism is a beautiful thing. Take the first step and just keep moving. The main thing is to stop the fighting. And I think that's where President Trump is completely on the right track. As long as the guns are blasting, you can't make any kind of a deal.
So what is Europe's perception right now? Because I'm looking at a lot of things. They put down their four-step plan for Ukraine. Here it is. You ready? Keep military aid flowing. Number two, aid lasting. Any lasting peace must ensure Ukraine's sovereignty and security, and Ukraine must be at the table for the peace talks. In the event of a peace deal, European leaders will aim to deter any future invasion by Russia into Ukraine. Now, what does that mean? I would ask for a follow-up. Does that mean you're going to put troops there? And there will be a coalition of the willing to defend Ukraine and guarantee peace in the country. A little shot at us. Go coalition of the willing. We've heard that phrase before. Does that make you, if you're Ukraine, what do you think of those four bullet points?
Well, I think they're worthless bullet points if there's no action behind them. And the Europeans, unfortunately, have a long and treasured history of having incredibly good meetings and lots of great photo ops, but execution is not usually on their checklist. They talk and talk and talk. And what Trump does is he's saying the train is leaving the station. And you guys either better get on board or you're going to be on your own. And that is the only effective way. That's why he's so enamored with tariffs, because people start looking at their watch, not their calendar, when a tariff is about to come flying their way.
Because it affects the prices immediately.
Situation.
Yeah. So French President Emmanuel Macron says he told a local newspaper there needs to be a strategic dialogue with European countries that don't have nuclear weapons because they can no longer depend on the American nuclear deterrent. That's an incredible thing to say, but I'm saying it. So do you believe that we've shown that we're not dependable?
No, I think we're highly dependable, but I think that expecting us to do the same thing over and over and expect different results is foolhardy. And if you look at the alternative, which is we surge more weapons to Ukraine, you know, short of giving Ukraine so much that Putin believes he's got an existential crisis on his hands, and then he goes nuclear, which is the last thing we want, because then we've got real problems. So we continue to surge weapons to Ukraine. Maybe they get a little bit of an advantage. The meat grinder turns the other direction. But how long is this going to go on? And how far do we deplete our own stockpiles when we're incapable of defending our interests elsewhere in the world, particularly in Asia? So Trump is looking multiple steps ahead. He's absolutely right on this. And, you know, Zelensky needs to understand that the United States is not a bottomless pit, and we're doing the best we can, but now it's time to work on a ceasefire and work on economic ties.
So a couple of things. If you want to play this out, this is my worry. Kyiv falls, and this becomes Trump's Afghanistan. Even though everything you said is true, and there were warnings along the way, and Zelensky came in hot in the Oval Office, if Kyiv falls, how does Trump shake that?
You know, that's going to be a tough one for him, because what he's doing is the right thing. But if Kyiv falls, I think, unfortunately, the Europeans are going to find themselves with lots of boots on the ground, and we're going to find ourselves backstopping.
Ambassador, what about you in the Trump world? I mean, people have, if you read your book, you'll find out that you kind of got lassoed into this whole impeachment thing. And I think that if people look at your record, you did a lot of great work with Trump. You understood him, and you went to bat strongly for him in Europe.
And I still go to bat for him. I don't think there was any question in the last election. The choice was very binary. Vice President Harris would have been a disaster as president. And I think President Trump is proving once again that he's about execution, not about talking. And so I was proud to vote for him. I'm proud to support him. But he's going to need a lot more than my support. He's going to need bipartisan support, particularly on these foreign policy matters. And the thing that would make Zelensky turn around in a New York minute and sign that deal and apologize is a few Democrats coming out of the woodwork and saying, you know what, we don't agree with Trump on whether the sun rises in the east, but on this one, he's right. And that, you know, statements like that would be very helpful to the United States.
Absolutely. And does it worry you? It doesn't worry Marco Rubio. I asked him last week on camera, and I looked at his body language, but it just threw me that we have so many people. We have, you know, Rick Grenell in Venezuela doing great work. And then we have Steve Witkoff. Most people really salute his presence in the Middle East. And Steve Witkoff was also at the meeting in Saudi Arabia. With all the envoys around, if you're Secretary of State, do you worry about people wondering who's in charge?
Well, we know who's in charge. It's President Trump. And, you know, all of us, and I don't use this in a derisive way or in a disparaging way, we're all tools. Witkoff is kind of the Swiss Army knife because they use him everywhere for every purpose, and it's great because he has direct access to Trump. He has Trump's confidence. For the, you know, the little I was able to accomplish, you know, in my sandbox, I also had direct access. I had direct communications. I knew what the president wanted, and I was able to communicate that forcefully. And people on the other side knew I was speaking for the president, not for some deputy assistant secretary, you know, who had four or five layers between himself and the commander in chief. So I think what President Trump has done is he's made it a leaner and meaner diplomatic corps, and that's really what is in the United States' interest in the long run.
Yeah, it's true. I remember in your book you said as soon as people realized you could get Trump on the phone, they began to pay attention.
Exactly. And, you know, it's no different for any other ambassador in any other country. It's the same thing. Do you talk to your leader or don't you? If you don't, what good are you?
Ambassador, great to talk to you. And, you know, keep talking out there because we need somebody who has experience with Europe and understands Ukraine, and you know both. Ambassador Gordon Sondland, thank you.
Thanks, Brian. Bye-bye.
Back in a moment.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Last week, a U.S. appeals court blocked a Biden-era student debt relief plan, which means the only way for young people to pay off their student loans is by dating Bill Belichick.
Dozens of dead birds believed to have died from avian flu have washed up on a Long Island beach. But don't worry, RFK is almost done eating them.
Pretty funny. I mean, it's been worse. I think it's pretty funny. I don't know. I think that those guys are the only reason to really watch that show every week. They don't have that Hallmark player. But I was reading a story with Lorne Michaels. Do you know he's like the most powerful man in the history of comedy, Eric? Yeah, I mean, do you know they say that he either ruined or made comedy? because it's all the same Lorne Michaels style. He finds you. If he doesn't find you, if he doesn't like you, he can ostracize you.
Doesn't surprise me.
But really, because SNL, to me, doesn't still have that same cachet. But evidently, they just talks about all the people, like Mick Jagger lives with him basically in his apartment every time he's there. You know, he's best friends with Bruce Springsteen. He goes on yachts with Sting and David Beckham. There's a little discordant thing. I know he's 80 years old now and he knows just about everyone.
He's great at identifying talent and nothing else, right?
I mean, I don't know. He says now that he has to trust other people because he doesn't think he knows this new comedy. So that when he hires younger people, he's got to let them go because it doesn't seem funny to him.
That's definitely true.
Right? I mean, a lot of this stuff is just not funny. And like I look at it, I'm saying to myself, who signed off on that skit? There's not an ending to it. Just as a viewer.
Weekend Update is definitely the most consistent.
Right.
Of anything they do, most consistent.
But here's what's changing. If you look at late night television, they got Jimmy Fallon down to 4 days a week. They fired James Corden or just didn't renew him, and they never replaced him. They told Seth Meyers he can stay to 2027, and they told him, but we're taking out your band. So everything has changed. So his tentacles at NBC, I think, are shrinking too, because you look at a guy like Colin Jost, where does he go next? Normally you'd say he'd get a talk show or go over to CBS or something, but they're not doing that. It's not cost effective anymore. They're not getting the ratings. So we'll have to see. I'm stunned by some of the changes that we're seeing, because the only thing that you have today that goes regularly, listen, Fox is having all-time high ratings. They just are. But the only other thing is sports. And besides sports, there's really nothing else that's bankable. And the NFL is far and away the biggest. Soccer's emerging. What happened with baseball is incredible. They evidently pay $550 million a year for baseball. So it's up for a new contract. And ESPN said, come in for a discount, if at all. And baseball says, wait a second. We're generating all this money. We not only do we want you to pay us more, we want more coverage on SportsCenter and around the channel. So they walked away. This is the dumbest thing baseball's ever done. ESPN's got faults. But it's still the SportsCenter, the clips that run off SportsCenter, the stuff that they promote on that channel can't be replaced. That's what MLS did. MLS went ahead and they went to Apple and they got a lot of money and people are watching on Apple, fine. But the day of watching on regional where you could just flip around and go, oh, soccer game there. Let me go watch the Red Bulls. Let me watch the Galaxy. No, you got to go get a subscription. And then you got to think to yourself, is there a game tonight? I don't know. I'm not reading the newspaper. There's no TV guide at my house. BrianKillmeade.com. I want to see you in St. Louis, March 22nd. Only a few seats left. And then over in Dayton, Ohio, WHIO listeners in June. BrianKillmeade.com.
I'm Dana Perino. This week on Perino on Politics, I'm joined by former GOP strategist and host of the Rich Zioli Show, Rich Zioli. Available now on FoxNewsPodcast.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Must listen to podcasts from Fox News Audio. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.